Okay, you're not allowed to cook a gedi b'chalev imoy. You're not allowed to cook a gedi. What is a gedi? A gedi is really a goat. It's really a baby goat in the milk of its mother. Now, by extension, it doesn't only apply to a gedi b'chalev imoy. It applies to all basar b'chalev. It says Halacha Torah three times. Number one, to teach you that it's osur. Why three times? Halacha Lemosh V'Sinai is a drasha. One time is to tell you that it is forbidden to eat basar that has been cooked with milk. Number two, it is forbidden to do the act of cooking. Just doing the action of cooking itself is a lo saseh. And number three, it's osur b'hano. It's osur b'hano. You're not allowed to derive any benefit from this. A basar b'chalav. Okay, so just before we even discuss this topic, what is the ta'ameh ha-mitzvah? Why is it indeed forbidden to... Is it indeed forbidden to cook basar b'cholav together? So there are many rishonim, they give different reasons. Okay, you don't need a reason. Whatever it says in the Torah, we don't have a choice. In fact, some say it's a choik. It's not meant to be understood. There's no rhyme, no reason. It's a gezeres hakosov. It's not for us to even attempt to understand why the Torah says that it's forbidden. It is forbidden v'zehu. Others say, no, you're allowed to go and have a little bit of a flavor of understanding, and they explain one of the ideas given. It's just about cruelty, animal cruelty. Because where does milk come from? Milk comes from, really from blood. Dam nechav v'naseh cholav. I don't remember exactly. It's not the main point I wanted to say, but there's one thing I found that I did find interesting is that it was a choik la'avoy dezara. Back in ancient times, at the time of Matan Torah, the goyim, they would, part of their rituals in worshipping gods is they would serve the god basar cooked in milk. And he writes, I don't have the sefer with me here. I left it in the other shul. The Eitzer Plois is an incredible chiddush, what he says. Where does it come from? It comes from Kai. Who was the first one to bring an animal carbon? The first one was Hevel. Hevel gami hevi michel mitzoinoi u mechel veihen. If I'm saying it correctly, u mechel veihen. What is the meaning of the word u mechel veihen? Fat. Chalev. Okay, it always gets confusing. There is chalev and cholov. Chalev are the forbidden fats of an animal, which you burn on the mizbeach. And then there is cholov, milk. Cholov. It says in the pasuk that hevel, hevi gamhu, mitzoinoi, u mei chel veihen. He brought from his sheep an animal sacrifice and its fats. It's fats. The goyim somehow had this tradition of what Hevel and Hashem accepted it. This in essence was the first carbon, was it not? It says that Adam Harishon was makir for carbon that had the keren achas, the re'im, the special creature called the re'im, which had one horn on its head. But that carbon that Adam Harishon was makir, it doesn't say anywhere in the pasuk. There's no beferish. The only place that it says beferish. By Ma'aseh Bereishis, a carbon was offered was Hevel. Hevel brought from his sheep and its fats. So the people who worshipped idols, the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, no Dor Enosh, Os Huchal Likra B'Shem Hashem, and they began, only a short time later did people began to worship idols. One thing led to another, and they began to offer idols. So who did they take from? Who was their tradition? Well, who was the first one to bring a sacrifice? Hevel. Hevel brought mechel vehen with its fats. They somehow made a drasha. I don't know, this is all a mystery to me. Al tikre mechel vehen. Ella mechol. Ella mechale vehen. Don't read us with a segel. Mechel vehen, which means forbidden fats, but cha of the patach, cha le vehen. They somehow interpreted or analyzed the history, there wasn't a Torah then. I mean, all of this is like no very abstract concepts. But the Torah does say that Hevel brought a sacrifice, and the sacrifice was accompanied with fat. And it's not for nothing that, not a coincidence, that the word chalev and cholov are related, because they have the same letters. And this is a matter of pronunciation, the vowels, chalev versus cholov. And in this word, it was to brought together with the animal. And that is how, somehow in ancient times, the root of how the goyim, who were toyim, everything about Avodah Zarah is a mistake. Isn't it interesting? It's all about making mistakes. That they see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rambam talks about how did Avodah Zarah come into being. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, but Hashem created a sun and a moon and stars and different forces of nature, and the Goyim were Toyim. They made mistakes. They didn't realize that the power of the sun, it's not the sun. The sun is Hashem's Shaliach. The gravity of the moon is not the moon, it's the Shaliach of Hashem. The Goyim who worship Avodah Zarah in Chazal are always called the Toyim. They made a mistake. They made an error. So they made another mistake. They don't know Diktuk. Instead of saying Chalev, they read it Cholav.
Wasn't written down.
Exactly. These are abstract. There are many layers. These are abstract concepts. It does say in the Torah, Hevel brought. Why does it even say it? Hevel, he brought a sheep. What does the Torah say?
He brought. It's included, right?
Right. It's part of the animal. So what is the Torah saying it? I don't know. But you just see a little bit of a fragrance of what of a concepts. It says in the Torah, Hevel brought the tzoin and the chalev. And it's not a coincidence. There's got to be a reason why chalev and cholev are the same letters, and you have to be very careful to know how to pronounce it correctly. And the goyim, when it comes to Avodah Zarah, the essence of a goy worshiping Avodah Zarah is called an error. They're called toyim. They make mistakes. They look at the sun, and they forget to realize the sun is just an agent of Hashem. And before they turn around, they begin to worship the sun itself. And then after they worship the sun, they begin to worship themselves. It doesn't stop with the sun. Okay, the sun is just one step in the process. They begin to make a lot of mistakes. They begin to worship themselves. They think they're gods at a certain point in time. So too, look at that. Torah, when it talks about bringing a carbon, there's a principle of bringing chalev, and chalev and cholev are interrelated. That is where it comes from. This is what it says in the Oitzer Pilois. He cites some sefer that I never heard of before. All the things he cites, saying all the sefer I never heard of before. And there's a relationship, and that is where it came from, that to bring a sacrifice, the goyim in ancient times, they would cook together basar b'cholav. And when the Torah was given to Klal Yisrael, this is a whole different dimension. I am part of the Torah. The Rambam is very into this, is that Kadosh Baruch Hu was speaking to that specific generation in different respects and telling them that you got to distance yourself from the customs of the Gentiles. The Gentiles, part of their religious service is to cook basar b'cholav. You may not do so. Okay, that is Divrei Agada as a hakdama to our topic. What's our topic? Of really two topics. I want to talk about whiskey, foods. That's really a little bit. I don't know if it talks about yayin nesach, the sherry. What's it called? The sherry cask. And well, that's the second one. But let's first talk about basar b'cholav. That's in this parasha. Are you allowed to cook, bake in your oven, not at the same time, basar and then cholov, or cholov then basar? You have an oven that's fleishig, so you use it primarily. Practically speaking, you have a standard oven you buy today in any appliance store, and you use it primarily for basar. You use it to whatever, anything you want. You cook, you bake, anything you do, when you do this, you don't cover what you're cooking. You put up inside of a pot, inside of a, I don't even know the terms, chicken, meat, in your oven, and you don't cover it. You put it in a pan, and you prepare it, and you turn on the oven, and you prepare it, and you use it, you use this in the oven. Then, vayhi hayoyim, your grandchildren come over, and they want some pizza.
The same day.
And you, same day, and you happen to have, well, the next thing you happen to have in your freezer, some frozen pizza. Are you allowed to take the frozen pizza and put it in a pan and put it in the very same oven that last night you used to prepare your dinner, bosar mamish? Is there anything wrong with doing so? So this is a big, big hot topic. Big hot topic are all the different principles that go into this in this discussion. Are you allowed to use the same conventional oven that we have today and use it for basar, and then in a different time use it for chalav? It goes without saying you're not allowed to cook at the very same time basar b'chalav. Why not? Maybe you could also do that. Why not? We'll get that in a second. What are the issues? Now, I assume most people wouldn't do that. I assume in this room over here, I don't know, I can't speak for everyone. At the same time, I would assume that most people don't even do it at different times. I'm not saying some people.
You have a problem because some people make a challah or rolls that are parallel.
It becomes fleishiks. And that's also not, you're not allowed to have milchitika bread. And by extension, some say not allowed to have fleishitika bread. What is the issue? So the issue over here is called zeya. What is zeya? Zeya is when you cook meat in an open pot. As the meat boils, as the liquid is going to be liquid, then the meat is usually being cooked in the liquid, and the liquid begins to boil, and there's a lot of moisture, and the steam rises. Now, that steam, what status does it have? Not so posh. The Prima Gaudim holds that steam is not fleishiks. It's not. Steam, what is steam? Steam is the evaporation of the moisture that's in the liquid. The meat is basar. When meat, this is you know, for example, what is it called? Distilled water. Do you buy this? Anyone here drink only distilled water? What I saw online an incredible thing about people who buy bottled water. Bottled water is a big scam. I was going to say, bottled water, people pay a fortune of money bottled water. If you're going to spend money on bottled water, you should only buy, at least according to this advertisement, this incredible, they showed them the whole experiment. They took all of the waters, and they did experiments with all the waters, and they found terrible things in all these bottled waters. It turns out that your tap water is probably even better than when you're paying a fortune of money. If you're going to spend money on water, according to this, I don't know. Tell me, I'm a conspiracy theorist. I don't know anything about this. Okay, I'm just telling you what I saw. If you're going to spend money on water, they showed after all the experiments, you buy distilled water. What is distilled water? Distilled water is they take water and they boil it. And it produces steam. And then there's some type of device as the steam accumulates, the steam turns back into liquid, and you catch it. And some type of device catches the liquid.
Yeah, the same way, right.
What do they do with schnapps?
They distill it, like your schnapps.
What do they distill?
That's why the IMS
held its, yeah.
French cognac, because it came steam.
Came back, right. So what do they boil for schnapps?
Wine? This was French wine.
French wine, yeah.
Distilled at a very high temperature.
Okay.
It becomes steam. Then it becomes liquid again. So the timelines are held.
That the steam is completely different.
Yeah.
There's no tarfus. So this is in halacha. It's very, and this, you should see this video, it's incredible. They show basically the distilled water. It's pure H2O. Once you boil it, the impurities, the toxins don't evaporate. They don't. Only thing that evaporates is hydrogen and oxygen. That's it. Mamela, when the steam accumulates, it's mamish, it's so pure.
Pure H2O.
It's so pure that it's tasteless. And that's why distilled water is not a popular thing to buy. I once did a taste test. We had at home a few different types of bottled water. And all the different brands, it's amazing. Water is not the same. You go into the store and you buy Poland Spring and Destani, what's called, all the different waters. You buy them all. And you close your eyes, you do a taste test. Even don't close your eyes. They all taste very different. Why do they taste different? Because there's a lot of stuff in there besides the H2O. There are minerals, there are this, that, and there's also a lot of toxins. There are a lot of things that are poisonous. The water is not pure. For drinking water, right? Drinking water. So the waters, they some people, I know someone, only will drink this type of water. They like the taste. This water is too heavy, too light, too sweet, too salty. They can discern different differences in the water. Because obviously there are a lot of things in the water. So there was this incredible video where they show within the laboratory these very sophisticated tests of testing the water, and they show what's really going on in the water. So you'll say, big deal, you know, the amount of toxins in the water is so minute, it's negligible. Okay, nachanami, halavai, that should be true. But then they show distilled, average distilled water, where water is boiled, it comes steam, and then it's collected. In the laboratory, it's unbelievable. It's like really, really as good as it gets. It's pure. Problem is, it's tasteless, and no one wants to drink it. So they do is, you pay a couple of bucks, they add some electrolytes. So who knows what they're putting in? They're probably poisoning you. They're poisoning you when they put back into it. Or you could actually buy a machine in your house for $100. Look on Amazon, a machine where you make your own distilled water. They have machines that cost like $100. You can have an unlimited supply of distilled water. You fill it up, you press the button, and it makes for you distilled water. You can do it yourself. I never tried. I don't have this machine. I'm not so machmir on these things. But in halacha, it's an amazing concept. Because the Prima Gadim Taka says, just like I'm giving you an illustration when it comes to distilled water is as pure as it gets. The bottled water that you're getting from some river, you don't remember a couple of months ago there was an accident, a train leaked chemicals, right? So that the place where it leaked the chemicals is near one of the places where they take water from some river, I don't know which brand, and they bottle that water. So that water, if it went into the environment and it still takes, who knows how long it takes until all the dust settles, the water is poison. So you go, what are you buying? They're still continuing to fill up from that river, from that stream. The water there in that area is poisonous because of what happened over there. I don't know. But distilled water, when you boil the water, the distilled water, it's pure. In other words, the steam that comes up has nothing in it. There are no minerals, there are no electrolytes, there's no toxins, there's nothing. So when you go in your oven and you put down a piece of meat that's soaking wet and you turn on the oven to 400 degrees and all you look in the window and you see steam coming up, what is coming up? What's coming up and going to the ceiling of your oven? Vapor. Is that vapor fleishigdika vapor? Or is that just... No, that's what the Prima Gadim, there's no such thing. Just like distilled water, none of the toxins are going up into the steam. And when the steam condenses and it comes back as liquid, it's pure as it gets. Because when you boil something, the only thing that you're boiling that goes up in the steam is pure water, H2O. So if you have a piece of meat and you boil it, and vapor comes up and goes to the ceiling of the oven and then condenses and falls back down. What's falling back down? Water. Let me take a step back. I didn't explain this correctly. This is the assumption. I have an oven. In the oven, I have a piece of meat. I boil it and vapor rises. This vapor is called the zeya. It rises, it gets to the top of the oven. So the assumption is vapor from basar is basar. It's basar. It's basar. So the vapor rises on the ceiling of the oven. The oven has now absorbed tam basar. Because the zeya, the steam, is derived from basar. So it's fleishig dika zeya. It's not true. I mean, I don't know scientifically to what degree. It's fleishig dika zeya. It gets to the ceiling. The ceiling of the oven now has absorbed fleishig dika zeya. Okay. Dinner is served. Tomorrow, it's now time for lunch. What's for lunch? Frozen pizza. So what do? We take the pizza, we put it into the oven, the same oven. We turn on the oven until whatever you want to turn on. And you look in the window, look at that. There's steam coming off from the pizza. Okay? Not really, but make believe it would. Make believe you have some homemade pizza. And it's very watery. And there's steam coming out from the pizza. And it's going up. The vapor is going up and it's touching the ceiling. Yesterday, what touched the ceiling of the oven? Fleishik dika zeya. Today, what's touching the oven? Milch dika zeya. And the oven is mixing, it's mingling in the ceiling of the oven. The zeya is mingling in the ceiling of the oven. So the oven now has inside, yesterday was basar, today is chalaf, mamish. Yo'oven and isa deraisa. You're cooking together, basar b'chalaf. You know, people only talk about the eating. What about the bishul? What about the bishul? How come no one ever talks about that? No one talks about... Microwave is the same thing? Yeah, same thing. How come no one talks about the isa deraisa of bishul? That's not called bishul, I guess. I guess that's not called bishul. It's not a shear. Okay, I guess, but it's still it's a bizrayu the bishul.
The premise that you're saying from a chemist's standpoint.
I know it's not true, but I want to say what the Veld says. Like, hold on for one second.
When you distill something, if you put it through the distillery and you've seen them, there's a couple of coils involved that it continues going. When the steam goes up, the steam does contain other particles.
Oh, that's the question. Does it really?
When it recondenses, you want it to recondense and let those particles drop off on one side in this distillery, and the water or whatever you're trying to condense out comes out the other.
Okay, so you're saying is that you're... Hey, we have to really look at, you have to go and study this scientifically. In the time of the Prima Godin, I don't think he had available a laboratory to analyze this. I don't know. I don't know the science, but it would appear that even if it's true that particles of meat do go up, let's make believe it's true, it's so negligible, the amount, if it's even true that there are particles of meat that are going up in the steam, so it's called fleishig dika steam, the amount of basar in that steam, even if it's there, it's so negligible, it's so small, halacha doesn't need to deal with it. Halacha doesn't, or maybe not, in the veld, you go out in the veld and they'll say, it comes to, this is you cannot cook in the same oven basar and then chalav, or chalav then basar, because if yesterday for dinner, I prepared basar, and the zeya, there is steam going up, and the steam touched the ceiling, that means the ceiling now has absorbed fleishiks. Today, I'm preparing cholov, and there's zeya going up. The ceiling of the oven is absorbing steam that is cholov. Wow, with the oven, the ceiling of the oven is now treif. Because in the ceiling of the oven is a taruvis of basar b'cholov. And then, when it begins to condense, and it begins to fall back down into my dish, tarfus, a taruvis of basar b'cholov, is now falling into my dish. Let's say it's not 24 hours, and even tam lufgam, that's only b'diavad. It's not nice time. No one's gonna go do lechatchila, go take you want a cup of coffee? Oh, here's the fleishig dika spoon. Don't worry, it's more than 24 hours since we used it. No one's gonna do that just because it's tam lufgam. You still need to kasher it. You can't go, it's more than 24 hours, so we want to kasher the kitchen. Now the kasher, it's more than 24 hours, it's fine, tam lufgam. In a chanami, tam lufgam is a het, is a kula. But you
say, and the same thing, we're not going to say bottle b'shishim.
It's bottle, right? It's when the zeya falls back into, it's bottle b'shishim, Ein mevavim, it's a lechatchila. All of these things are very, very important. Everything you're saying, because
from a chemist standpoint, when we used to distill things out in chemistry lab, there were different levels of purity that we would get based on the level of the distillery.
Right.
Okay, it's not all the same. It's not when you have distilled water or anything that you're going to purchase that there's a claim on the packaging that it's distilled. It's not all the same. There are many techniques, and there are it's not all the same. But let's just look at a simple conventional oven today in someone's home, a regular standard oven, standard size. In the evening, you prepare basar, and you look in the window and there's steam. The next morning, you prepare cholov and you see there's steam, and they're both both dishes are uncovered. So what is the veld? What do you say in the veld? Ha, mamish treif. Mamish treif. Because if last night the steam touched the ceiling, yeah? But let me finish up. And today the steam of cholov touched the ceiling and they mixed. So the ceiling now is treif, and then when some liquid from falls back down into the dish, that liquid is mamish basar b'cholov, and you have now in your dish basar b'cholov. Now there are a lot of
The level of distilling in that oven is not a distillery. It's just going up and it's coming down.
So
no distilling.
The concept.
And then condenses.
So to the naked eye, we think that it's treif. And taka, that really is the halacha. Even though you'll bring in a chemist, and I'll tell you that everything that we just said over here, maybe is a baba maisa, that when when steam rises from the piece of meat last night, there is no basar that's touching the roof, the ceiling of your oven. There's no basar touching, nothing. There's no basar. You want to say there's a reach, a fragrance? Reich alav milsa. Reich is much more lenient. You want to talk about a reich?
You're talking that it's not covered.
Not covered. Nothing is covered now. Okay. So someone may come along and make an argument that, I saw the meat. I saw there was steam rising. What you saw rising was H2O. There's no basar, and even if Dr. Dov will tell us that if you go to a laboratory, you may find under a microscope a little bit of meat that somehow pushed its way up.
I can knock out his argument. Because let's say you walk into a restaurant where they're making, you smell the what are you smelling when they're cooking the meat?
Reicha is nothing.
Yeah, but let's say you close and you smell the steam, and the steam goes in your nose.
Yeah.
So your mouth becomes fleshy because you have...
No, of course not.
Okay.
Reichas, so...
No, but there's more than
Reichas. In the Welt, and that's Taka the Halacha. The Halacha...
You're not supposed to walk by a Chometz bakery.
Mashu. Chometz also the Mashu. It's a Chumrah. You're right. But let's be practical now. In the Welt, you go cook at night in your oven meat open, and it rises to the top, there's steam, and then in the morning you prepare something with milchix and it rises to the top. Oh, you go ask any rabbi, will tell you, don't eat it. Don't eat it. I think that's the halacha. You don't eat it. No one's going to allow you to. Now, along comes Dr. Dove. He puts on his chemist coat, and he tells you, what kind of baloney is this? What are you talking about? What exactly is the steam that you saw in the evening when you make? You saw steam. So gesunde, you saw steam. That's not fleshix. That's not basar. And even if there's a manish, some molecule of basar that somehow pushed its way up together with the vapor, it's negligible. It's bottle. It's not significant. No way in the world. And tomorrow when there's going to be some cholof, what? It's vapor. So they mix together. Water mixes with water. It comes back down. And even if something comes back down, it's so such a mashahu. It's bottle b'shishim. There's nothing to talk about. Why in the world should it be usur to go and to use the same oven today for basar and tomorrow for cholov? So you'd be shocked to know that there are some rabbis, okay, I can't give you names, this goes back many years ago, that are lenient. And they're lenient really for another reason. It's because today all of our ovens have vents. Today, by law, you can't buy an oven today. Every single oven today has a vent. Not like in the olden days, or maybe you can do something, you can do down different types of whatever it is, but they have vents. So the truth is, there's really no zeya that's coming back down. Listen, you have to go look inside the oven and see what really happens. In combination with the reality that, and by the way, the Prima Gadim also says, the Prima Gadim acknowledges that there's no mamoshus of basa b'cholof, and he's a das yachid. Okay, he right. The Prima Gadim is from the more lenient when it comes to zeya. But many poskim, they don't want to accept the Prima Gadim's leniency. Somehow, to man's perception, it doesn't look good. Even though scientifically there's nothing there. And this gets into the whole big topic of perception. Perception. What is the perception? In the next, if we have time for the next thing, we're probably not going to have time to do tomorrow, is perception in halacha carries enormous weight. To the naked eye, you see steam rising from basar, and you see steam rising from chalav, that automatically creates an isser, basar b'chalav. In reality, is there really a significant amount of basar b'chalav that should be asr? No. So, halacha l'maisa, it's asr. But today, there's a sniff. What's the sniff? Our ovens don't have vents. So, most of the steam does not condense and drip down because it escapes. It escapes, evaporates, escapes through the vent or the dynamics. You can't say there's no condensing. There is some condensing. There is something that does happen. I don't know. I really don't know. You have to go and analyze. I'm just telling you what the place can say. Is the ovens that we have today, they're different. They're not like what they had in the time of Chazal. And it's not an equivalence. And being that the Zeya really, be'etzem, is no mamoshus. And be'etzem really should be mutter even when it does drip down. Like the Prima Gadim wants to say. So you can be makel. You can be makel in our ovens today where there are vents and there's not much condensing, if at all. And it's completely separate. And of course, the oven has to be spotlessly clean, so you don't have anything mamish falling. You know, you get sloppy. You put something into an oven, things fall. You know, you push things around, things fall here, fall there. Before you turn around, something can fall in. That goes without saying. No harm done. No harm done if you actually cook it in the same oven.
Except with the commercial ones. So
you go into a catering facility. Now, I was once many years ago to Ask OU, and they took us to the Hilton. And it's pretty dangerous. The Hilton, they have three ovens. What is an oven in the Hilton? What is an oven? It's a room. It's a mamish room. How big? I would say the room is about the size of the kitchen. Everyone here, I'm sure, has been in the shul kitchen. In the young Israel of Midwood, there's a kitchen. That's the oven. You walk into the oven. In Hilton, they have three of those. Three rooms, just with mamish that size. And what do they do? You close the door, and they turn up the temperature. And the temperature in there can get up to 1,000 degrees. Unbelievable, okay? The temperature in that room get up to, that's pretty crazy, outrageous, right? I don't know how much energy it takes to do that. And how do you put the food in there? They have carts. They have like these carts, and they have trays, and you put the trays on the carts, you slide them in the carts, and you push it into the room, and you close the door, you lock the door, and you turn on the temperature. Right, it's a warming oven, but it reaches 1,000 degrees. So the warming ovens that they have on Shabbat, a caterer on Shabbos and a shul kiddush, they bring in these warmer. How high can they go? I don't know the temperature. They go pretty high.
No, they don't. Because it's sealed.
They go high enough that it can burn you.
They go pretty high.
It's really, I don't think it even
goes. How high does it go?
180.
I'll go look tonight. I sit there tonight in that room over there. They have one of them right there over there.
Yeah, but it doesn't go higher. Because
how high does it go?
180,
190. No, it goes higher than that. Go look. I'll look at it tonight. They go pretty high. I'm sure different models. These rooms, they get very, very high. So I remember when we went with the givers, they showed us that when the OU does an event, first of all, they don't clean the room. The only thing they just take one of those carts and they thoroughly scrub it. They scrub it. Those carts, and they bring their own trays, they put the food, and they put it into the room over there. They don't clean the ceiling of the room. No one gets up on a ladder and starts cleaning the room, the ceiling of the room, so that in case there's some zeya that's...
Because it doesn't get that hot, that's why, I'm telling you.
All right, I don't know. But they cook, a lot of the food is actually cooked on premises. They don't just warm it. These things that you have in the shul, or shul kiddush, they don't cook anything in shul. Everything is pre-cooked, and they just come and they warm it up. There, when you cook something for the very first time, it has to reach a very high temperature, much higher than when you have a warmer. In any event, so along come other paiskim, they say with all these, all you need to really do is you need to cover it. That in other words, you have to have the oven. The oven has to be designated for one purpose. What purpose? Let's say fleishiks. I use the oven primarily for basar. And when I cook basar, I do not cover what I'm cooking. But...
Here, this is what it says. There's a big oven here that has 5 adjustment temperatures up to 185 degrees.
That's it?
Yeah, how the board burns it. It burns because if it cooks, it starts evaporating and it's, you can't cook a pea.
Okay. As oil gets up to 180 degrees, that's it. Okay, could be. I don't know. Could be. I feel they get a lot higher than that. Okay, an oven can easily go to 400, 500 degrees, easy.
You run a cycle with, it's clean. They run a cycle with
water. Oh, okay, that will get you down in a second.
Okay.
Okay, that's already kashering it. I'm talking about not kashering it. I'm not talking about kashering it. Let's just talk about using it the way it is. Use it for bus, use it for chalaf. So there are people, I know is the fact, there are people that are very, when it comes to an oven, you have children and you want to go give them pizza. So what do? You have an oven, the oven is designated for basar, and now you want to go use it for chalaf. So fine, you're not going to be so lean just to use it mamish for chalaf, because you know, you're afraid it's not clean and you are machmir when it comes to zeya. You want to be machmir when it comes to, what you do is you cover it. It should be thoroughly covered. And you got to pick which one you're going to cover. And I'm going to use the oven primarily for fleishiks. So for fleishiks, you don't have to cover the food. But when you want to go use it for what is your, not the primary use, if you want to go make pizza, the pizza is put in the pan, and the pan must be completely covered. Now, that and the only reason why we make oil is because the ovens today have a vent. If the ovens would not have a vent, according to the halacha, prima gadim, you're not allowed to do that. If you have an oven that is not an oven, that is not, has no vent, an oven of the time of the Shulchan Aruch, you're not allowed, technically speaking, if you were to cover, it would be good. You're not allowed to. Gezera, that it's not going to be covered well. It's very easy, very common that you cook something in an oven and somehow, due to the heat, we all know that, due to the heat, the cover pops off or partially pops off. And certainly in a microwave, pop, what was that? Certainly in a microwave, it's going to pop off and there's going to be, you'll be exposed to the zeya, finished. And since halacha lemaisa with machmir, halacha lemaisa, even though they'll tell you that really in the zeya there's no real mamoshus of basa v'chalaf, that's not the way we accept the halacha. Halacha lemaisa, the prima gadim says you can be makel. All the other poskim say no, you cannot be makel. Why not? I don't know why not. Because they held that the zeya is fleishik de gezeya, pella. Or they held that it's a matter of perception. I don't know what the makar is. Is it a scientific analysis or is it a perception analysis? And most poskim say, if you have a regular oven time, the Shulchan Aruch, you're not allowed to cook basar and then cook cholov because there's going to be zeya. In the case, of course, where you're cooking things with the zeya, and zeya is has the status of basar, the status of cholov. Prima Gadim says it's not really true, and you're not allowed to do it. You really could do it, but the heter is if you thoroughly cover what you're cooking, that's cholov, then it's permitted. Because we combine the fact that since it's not really a mamoshos, ordinarily covering doesn't really help in a regular oven that's sealed. But today, in the ovens that we have today, because there's a vent and there's not much condensing, so then even though it may happen occasionally that when you're covering gets exposed, the cover is opened, but if you start out doing your best to cover it, so there are many poskim that will say it's okay.
What about
it's,
the rack?
The rack is no problem. Why the rack? The rack, what's the rack?
The
rack.
The
food is not touching the rack. The food. No, it's a double tam. It's you don't say that the tam of one pot, not bar not, no same tam bar no same tam. That's not bar not. You don't say that the flavor inside the rack is going to go into the next pot. You know, as long as it's dry, if the rack, one point in time, fleishik spilled on the rack. So the rack has a belua of basar. And now you put a milchadika pot that's completely dry on that rack. You don't say that the belua of the basar that's in the metal pot is going to go into the other pot. Even a milchadika pot, you don't say that. Even within 24 hours, you don't say that. As long as it's totally dry. If it gets wet, then you got a problem. And even if you get wet, it's also not bar not. So that's another level. So that's another level of chumrah. You put down a piece of aluminum foil.
Two very easy practical solutions for the oven is that most probably putting it in aluminum foil or aluminum pan.
You cut, right.
You always have a gigantic aluminum pan. Turn it upside down over.
Right, that's what you're supposed to do.
Microwave.
Right, microwave is not going to work.
You have the vents in the side.
Microwave is a nightmare.
The vents in the side, it doesn't let the steam drop back.
Halacha lemaisa in Shulchan Aruch we paskin zeya milsa. That's the bottom line. Even though we've now come making a scientific analysis, and I'm proving you from distilling water and different things, halacha lemaisa, even though the Noisei Kelim, they challenge this whole concept of zeya, halacha lemaisa, zeya milsa, you're not allowed to go cook basar and then chalav in a sealed oven. But because the Noisei Kelim do acknowledge that it's a tremendous chumrah, when we combine that today, in today's day and age, where we have very large ovens and there's a very high ceiling relative to where the food is, and there's also a vent, if you will cover what you're cooking, cholov, yesh mokom lahakel, when you need to be makel. You can be makel. Poskim will say you can be makel. That is what. Now, in a microwave, the poskim will not makel. Because in a microwave, there's no such thing as covering anything. Because a microwave, the nature of the science is it will pop. It's going to pop whether you like it or not. So there's nothing, there's not shaykh to cover anything in a microwave. Oh, you'll tell me you go to a hotel, you double seal, right? You know, they go on the airplanes, they give you kosher foods, and it's doubly sealed. I guess when you double seal it, I guess that's the same problem with using a non-kosher oven. It's all this the same exact thing. What's called a non-kosher oven? You go rent an apartment somewhere, you go in, and there's an oven. You don't know who used the oven before. You have a real oven. You rent an apartment and there's an oven. Who used the oven? They could have tired. So what? Who cares? Who says you have to even cash in the oven? You're not cooking on the oven itself. So you just completely double seal it. You completely double wrap it. So that is a cooler. But what about if you don't want to double wrap it? So technically there's a lot of grounds to be makel because the height of the ceiling of the oven is very high. And if you cover it, there's grounds to be makel. Those who want to be even more machmir, they kasher the oven. Now, how do you kasher an oven? You put it on its highest setting. The truth is, kashering an oven, you need to do what's called libun kal. So the Welt says libun kal is a self-clean cycle. Because in a self-clean cycle, you're raising the temperature of the oven higher than it ever was when you actually cooked food or baked anything inside, because the temperature is much higher. The highest you can set an oven on is, I don't know what it is, it's 500, 600, is that correct? But when you do self-cleaning, you can get up to 1,000 degrees. So it's higher, what? 700? You can get it higher. Self-cleaning always gets it higher than the highest temperature you can get it when it's not on self-cleaning. So that is what we call libun kal. But guess what? Not everyone agrees to that. Not everyone agrees that a self-cleaning cycle is considered to be a libun kal. Because libun kal means you put in the oven, in the surface of the oven, on the surface of the oven, coals. And the coals cause it to become, the metal to become so hot that if you were to put a piece of straw on the oven, it would on the opposite side, it would burn. So here's the problem. In Shulchan Aruch, Libun Kal is where you put the coals inside the oven. Self-heating is, you don't putting anything inside. The heating is usually from the outside. It's from underneath. Now the broiler does go on. It depends on the oven. The broiler does go on, there's fire in the oven itself. Okay, so that would be better. It depends on the oven. Some of the ovens, the broiler is on the top. So the fire is burning inside itself. But some ovens, the broiler is not part of the oven itself, so the broiler never really goes on. The heating is on the outside. I don't know, it's very complicated. Every oven is different, and some argue that doing a self-cleaning cycle is not equivalent to what Shulchan Aruch demands, a libun kal. Some say it is, some say it's not. But the fact that you're dealing here with Zeya, what? It's what? It was het, it wasn't issa. Yeah, well, it was het, right.
You put in a small paper bag and you see if it lights up. If it burns, then the zecher let him go.
But it has to be on the inside.
Yeah.
Any event, the oilam is very magel. I mean, is that what some people do is that they want their fleshiks, and then you want to have milchiks. So they put on the self-cleaning cycle. If you want to make pizza, so they first put on the self-cleaning cycle for an hour. After also that the oven has to be clean, and you put on the self-cleaning cycle for an hour, and you basically kasher the oven, and then you make the pizza by covering the pizza. You also should cover it. You cover it as well. And some people, probably most people, tradition. Did you ever see your parents who never knew what a self-cleaning oven was, who never heard of such a thing? Did you ever see your parents cook in the oven milchiks? Never. Never. This is shocking. You're going to go put in your oven milchiks?
If it was covered, why not?
There are many people that wouldn't dare do this. And today they'll buy a toaster oven. They want to make pizza. They'll buy a little toaster oven. They'll buy a little gizmo, a little gadget, and they'll use to make your pizza. So it all depends. Me'ikar hadin, you have a very, very large spectrum. Most people that I know, they wouldn't play around. It doesn't mean it. They wouldn't play around. It all depends on you know, you have a lot of kids and you need to feed them. I know a very big Talmud Chacham. Okay, a very big Talmud Chacham, enormous Talmud Chacham, very big Yerushalayim. He told me, he has a lot of children, and he told me at home, when we want to do milchiks, we do it. He says, Rav Herschel Shachter told him he can do it. He puts on the self-clean cycle, he makes sure the oven is clean, and they keep the oven pretty clean, and they want to make for the kids pizza, frozen pizza. They're not going to go play with these little toaster ovens, which is a big patch gun, they don't even work.
Oven a few times, it breaks,
the heating element breaks. It's true, it breaks even if you don't turn it on a few times. The heating element breaks. It's a very delicate piece. It's the starter. And it costs a fortune to replace. They should teach every single newlywed how to change it yourself. You can save yourself thousands of dollars if you learn how to change that piece yourself, both on the boiler and on the oven, because it costs, you call a guy to come do it for you, it costs a fortune. Ridiculous highway robbery. You go buy it yourself and do it yourself. I don't know how to do it. I'm afraid to do it. I don't know how to do it, but it would be kedai. I would have saved a lot of money because they break on the boiler and the oven. They break meisim b'chol yom. And you're right. But he told me, I was very surprised, he told me that he does it all the time. His wife does it all the time. We want to make pizza, they put on the self-clean cycle, and then they make pizza. And then for dinner, they put on the self-clean cycle, and they use it for fleishiks. He told me he does it all the time. Rav Herschel Shachter told him he can do it, l'chatchila, and that's what he does. And you combine all of the coolers together. Is that, first of all, our ovens today, the ceiling is relatively higher than it is in time of Chazal. Number two, this event. Number three, we don't really see much, the steam is not really, the prima gadim, it's not really basar, it's not really basar v'cholav. And if you cover the pizza, what can go wrong? What can go wrong, right? A lot can go wrong. Okay, but some people cannot tolerate this. It's like, what? What are you doing? You're a flesh shikdika oven, you're preparing pizza and a fleishtik oven, they go out of their mind. They can't see such a thing. It's not something which is tolerable to certain people. Kol hakavod, to each his own. It's kedai, you gotta know the ikar hadin, because a rabbi, if you're a rabbi, someone's gonna call you and tell you what happened, and you have to really know the ikar hadin, what is the mitzias, yeah? It's kosher, everything is kosher, b'diavad. Everything is kosher. B'diavad zeya, unless you saw your b'diavad, because even if there was zeya, it's bottle.
I know it's bottle.
So b'diavad, everything is kosher.
The whole thing is aim about
the whisper. Right. So you shouldn't l'chatchila go right. Correct. When you go to it. Let's say you go to a dinner. You go to a wedding. I mean, I was really shocked when I went on Ask OU. Okay, that was many years ago. So they took us to the Hilton. And they showed us everything that can go wrong, everything that does go wrong. And basically, the mashkichim there, when they demonstrate, you go to a dinner, you go to a wedding, it's very, very likely when you're eating something at a wedding or at a dinner, it's very likely, you think everything's okay, something went wrong. Something went wrong, and the answer to the solution was, oh, it's batel. It's meisim b'chol yom. You know, if you don't know, you're very, oh, everything's idealistic. Everything is a perfect world. Everything goes according to plan. There's never a shaila. When you're preparing enormous amount of portions, there's always something that's going to go wrong. And what's going to happen is, when you call the headquarters, when the mashkiach calls headquarters, we got a problem over here. Okay, how much of this item fell in or got mixed up? Okay, make the calculation. You need to be a gzuntai. A mashkiach needs to have a degree in math, in math to be a mashkiach. Okay, we need to make the calculations over here to determine if it's bottle. I think that's how Rabbi Belsky got his job. Rabbi Belsky used to work for a no-name kashrus organization. This is the story. He worked for a kashrus or they don't even heard of. And it happened to me that the OU also needed to use a certain product. So Rabelsky went down to this factory, and Rabbi Ginnak, who was then just became the head of the OU, probably goes back who knows how many years, came down also to see what's going on. Rabelsky was there, and they both needed this product. Rabelsky, I think, so he took off his clothing, and he got into the machine. He got into this machine, and he made an inspection, and he came out, and in his head, he made these very sophisticated calculations, mathematical calculations, to determine if it's okay. And he came to the conclusion it's okay. And Rabbi Ginnak, who didn't know from all the sophistication, was watching Rabbi Belsky get into the machine and pashka with all, and then come out and make these mathematical calculations in his head. And he was blown away. How did you do that? Superman. How are you able to go, you knew everything, you're able to understand all the technology and get into the nitty-gritty, and on top of that, make these calculations in your head? Even people with a PhD in math can't do this. And he was blown away. And he said, come work for us. We'll pay you a lot more. Why? It was originally by the Chaf K. By the Chaf K? That was the first job he had? Yeah. Could be.
Before the OU,
come work for us. We need people like you who can do this, and that's how he joined the OU. Okay, so there are always mathematical calculations. And here's just a dogma of an example of bas b'cholav, and here is something which is mamish, which is meisim b'chol yom, and our ovens are not the type of ovens that existed in years ago, and also today it's becoming more common. I really don't know. No, it's more common where ovens have two different parts.
Convection ovens,
that's another whole type of thing, because there's a flow of air. So there, that probably creates a much greater challenge, because there's, what's a convection oven? Just basically, it's a fan.
There's less of a challenge.
It's a fan.
More air.
It circulates. So what is it circulating? What is a convection oven?
Hot air.
Hot air, a fan. Just a fan, that's all it is, right? It causes it to cook more evenly, because it's not just the fire, the fan.
It doesn't give you as much steam.
The fan, but it's blowing things around artificially. So when you're adding air, now it's not just steam, it could indeed be blowing actual particles of food. So it gets much more complicated. Then a lot of ovens say there are two compartments. They have different cubicles in some of these newer ovens. So for the frum world, oh, wonderful. Different cubicles. This will use the fleishiks, and this will use the milchiks. Is that really true? Does the air circulate? Does the zeya, and with its convection ovens, where there's a fan blowing, is each cubicle isolated? Or no? When you're operating one cubicle, automatically there's going to be some flow of some particles or matter, whatever it is, going from one to the other. Every oven is different. Every model is different. It's very, very similar. You get electric. Now everything is electric. The electric ovens have its own unique issues. And all right, so this is just a tipa shebiyama of sugya of basar b'cholav in modern times. Amen.